Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, welcome back from the Democrat National Convention here in Chicago. It is day number three, and Tim Walz takes the stage tonight. But no relation, I sat down with another guy with a close last name, only his is a T in it, Congressman Mike Walz from Florida. We did a press conference today at Trump Tower in Chicago, talked about everything from Afghanistan, Iraq, national security, crime, the border, you name it. And Congressman Mike Walz hit it up today and how Kamala Harris's administration would fail this country even more and push the world into a much more perilous place. After the press conference was over, I'd sit down with the congressman and we had a one-on-one opportunity to chat about a few things, including Pennsylvania and how it would be affected by a ban on fracking, how much the left's war on energy hurts Pennsylvania, and how much Tim Walz's stolen valor should matter to you as a gun owner. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Congressman Mike Walz of Pennsylvania from Trump Tower in Chicago earlier today. All right, here with Congressman Mike Walz from Florida. Great to see you, Congressman.
Yeah, good to see you. Thanks.
Thanks for making time today. You talked a lot about energy today, energy independence for America, day one, drill, baby, drill. Pennsylvania, fracking, which Kamala Harris has said she wants to end. She hasn't officially said she doesn't want to end it. How bad is the attempts to end fracking for our energy independence?
Well, it's not just our own economy. It's our geopolitical security as well. Not only has this administration gone to war on the permitting and licensing processes, whether it's fracking, drilling, shale up in Canada at the Keystone XL pipeline that they canceled, it's been a full-on war on American energy. That has led to, coupled with massive federal spending, the inflation crisis that we're in. So bottom line, you unleash American oil and gas, which, by the way, is cleaner than most of the rest of the world. You not only solve our inflation problem, you not only solve much of our economic problem, but you dry up Putin's war machine and you dry up Iran's war machine. You know, the old saying that Russia's a gas station with nukes. You drive down the global price of oil by increasing American supply and exports. And he's not only as you dry up his war machine, he's economically on his back foot. You get that price of oil down below about $55 a barrel, and they literally can't afford to fight anymore. And, oh, by the way, Iran, too, which is fueling everything that's going on in the Middle East. So it is we are blessed to have it, but we have an administration that, for ideological reasons, is at war with it.
And then you think about the ban on liquid natural gas exports, too. I mean, those.
You layer on to that. So I had lunch with the prime minister of Lithuania, small Baltic state that Russia has a bullseye on. And she said, look, you asked us to stop buying Russian gas and start buying yours. We did. They now buy 85% of their gas through the terminals in Louisiana and Texas that now have an export ban. It is so. She said, what do you want me to do? I've got to go back to Russia. It's just the most asinine, backwards thing I've ever seen. But it's all because of this climate obsession. And look, we all want a clean environment, and I think there's some real debates around the science. But at the end of the day, when that's the driver of your policy and you suppress American natural resources and then you shift billions in taxpayer dollars to buy Chinese-made solar panels, Chinese-made wind turbines that not only cannot power our current economy, can't power the economy of the future. An AI search takes about 30 times the amount of energy as a typical kind of Google search. The data centers, the power, the servers that you need to power the economy of the future can't be run on wind and solar, period.
You signed a letter. You're one of 50. I mean, you're a Green Beret.
Yeah.
One of the 50 who questioned Tim Walz's valor, stolen valor, no question about it. How concerning is this to the American people?
Well, I could tell you it is a slap in the face of the veterans community. He didn't do what was needed to be done to be a command sergeant major, period. He should be proud of his service. Fine. But if you're so proud of it, why are you lying about it? He was demoted to master sergeant, and that's how he should be describing himself. And to a lot of people who say apples and oranges, it's a big deal to us. It is stolen valor for those who served in the command sergeant major rank and did what it took to retire from it. But also, I commanded a unit in the National Guard as a commander, as a person in leadership. When you're called, you go. And he absolutely knew, according to the people in his own unit. Look, I think the bigger issue is that this was Harris's first major decision.
Right.
And this is who she went with. She would likely be the only person in the room with any military experience at all, a heartbeat from the commander in chief. And you have someone who's fraudulently lied about it and allowed people hundreds of times, journalists, people introducing them as events, what have you, misrepresent it. And he just allowed it to happen.
I think there's another issue, too, and that's, Pennsylvania, where we broadcast from, out of Philadelphia, must-win state, right?
Right.
Here's a guy claiming to use his military experience to try to take away the rights of other people by saying, I carry these weapons of war in war, which he did not do, and then to try to restrict people's Second Amendment freedoms and liberties.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And by the way, I carried a weapon of war, in actual combat.
Yeah. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think that's a great point and well said. When you are quoting that experience and lying about it as a matter of credibility for a policy position, you're just not only misrepresenting yourself, you are misleading and lying to the American people, and you're not worthy of the trust they put in you.
The Secret Service, obviously, Butler, PA, a lot of questions around that. I still have a lot of questions around it.
The more we dig into it, the more questions I have.
Right?
Like, how did he make these IEDs? How was he searching and getting that information, and it never popped? How did the FBI let that happen? What was he planning to do with them? What was his motivation? I'm not convinced that he acted alone. I don't know how I don't know how they came to that conclusion so quickly. I mean, we're very quick to say that when we know so little, and we just had an active Iranian plot thwarted, where a Pakistani-born national with ties to Iran put down payments on hitmen to take Trump out before he was arrested. So this isn't just an isolated incident, one-time thing that we need to get answers on. These are ongoing plots right now as we speak, and I'm don't think the Secret Service, certainly not DHS under Mayorkas, is instilling confidence in the American people that Trump is safe.
And you mentioned today, well, even Joe Scarborough said that this morning on Morning Joe. He said, if I were Trump, I wouldn't trust the Secret Service. I mean, it's Joe Scarborough saying that, right? And you mentioned this
kid. And yet he's out there doing an outdoor rally today.
I know.
Right?
You mentioned this kid had these encrypted phones, overseas encrypted phones, right?
Well, they were described to us by the FBI as platforms. So look, if you have a WhatsApp or Signal account, those are U.S. companies. Those are hosted in the United States. You can get access to them here. Why did he need them in Belgium, New Zealand, and Germany? Three different countries, three different platforms, fully encrypted. What was that all about? We don't know yet.
Yeah, I hope we get some answers. Congressman, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, joining me now live from the DNC, not a Democrat, because Democrats won't come on the show. But that's okay. We're not upset by it, because I have a true rock star who was a speaker at Trump's last rally in Pennsylvania. I'm talking about our buddy Linda Kearns, and she joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Linda, congrats on the honor of speaking at a Trump rally. Very, very cool, my friend.
Yeah, it was quite the experience, Rich, and thanks for having me on. It sounds like you're about as welcome out there as Joe Biden.
Well, I have a better speaking time than he does, so there's that. You know, they didn't have the the seventh grade marching band speak before me, so that's good. You know, I can still speak my own show, which is nice. So,
yeah, I'm a little worried about you. I'm afraid you're going to stand in line at a food truck for a Chicago hot dog and end up with a vasectomy with what's going on out there.
Already got the vasectomy on day one. Yeah, had to do it to get checked in the hotel. Had to get it done. So I've just been icing away. I figured I was going to be in pain anyway and suffering, so I might as well have a reason to be in pain and ice myself, Linda. And that's the way I approached it. You know what I mean?
There you go. Well, thank you so much for having me on, because I did want to just talk to the listeners again about protectthevote.com. I need so many volunteers across Pennsylvania, and that's actually what I spoke about at the Trump rally in Wilkesboro last weekend, how we need volunteers. We need our guys to watch those guys.
Our guys to watch those guys. All right, so first of all, let's talk about a couple things. A caller yesterday asked me, she said, Rich, am I supposed to do my mail-in ballot early and get that done? And I said, I think that's what the campaign wants. Am I correct on that assumption?
Yes, Rich, because if you can get your mail ballot in as soon as they come out, which we expect that to be around September 16th or 17th, but it'll vary by county, we know that you're done, dusted, you're ready, the mail ballot's in. We don't have to worry about calling you to make sure your ballot goes in, and then we can spend our resources on what we call the low propensity voters. In addition, we Republicans, we patriots are productive people. We have work, we have families, we have things that can interfere, and we don't want you to get to election day and realize, whoops, I don't have time. So it's better to get your ballot in ahead of time. And if you can go to your local election office and request it, you can just Google your board of elections in the county where you live. You can request it right there, fill it out and return it. And then it's in and you know that they have it.
Okay. But a lot of people are worried about that, Linda Kearns. They're worried about the security of the ballot, especially if they do mail-in.
I completely understand, and I know they're called mail-in, but you do not have to actually mail it. You can return it yourself to a Board of Elections office. In addition, because of ProtectTheVote.com and appearances on shows like yours, we have recruited a lot of attorneys. I'm going to have attorneys watching the mail ballots be counted. I'm going to have attorneys in court. I'm going to have attorneys roving around. So we are on it. We are protecting the vote, which is why I need your listeners to go to ProtectTheVote.com.
Wonderful. Okay, excellent. All right, so go to ProtectTheVote.com. And then once they get to ProtectTheVote.com, Linda Kearns, what do you want them to do?
I want them to sign up. And we also have TrumpForce47.com, which is more the political side, where people can volunteer to call other voters and get involved in the campaign that way. But what we're doing now is anyone who signs up for ProtectTheVote.com or TrumpForce47.com, we're giving them training so that they can decide what they want to do and how they can help. For ProtectTheVote.com, I need poll watchers, poll workers, people available on election day, people to be drivers, people to be observers. So that's why I need so many people in all of the counties of Pennsylvania.
All right. You need all the people to sign up and help out, which is good, because we can't just sit back and let somebody else do it. Right. We got to step up ourselves and help out and play a big role in this. Right, Linda?
Right. We want to reelect Donald Trump, and we want to put him back in the White House. And the way that we do that is we make sure that this election's fair. And we do that by making sure that we are watching everything. And we're well on our way. I have a lot of volunteers already, but there's never enough. I need as many as possible. And that's what I spoke about at the rally. And I spoke to President Trump about that backstage. I did complain to President Trump that when I went out on the stage, they didn't play Elvis music. So I think he's going to look into that for me.
That's outrageous. What an insult. I mean, come on. Meanwhile, I was in New York doing Jimmy Fallon's show, and we played Elvis music.
I heard that, and I thought that was great. And, you know, Rich, talking at the Trump rally, I had to go on stage in front of 10,000 people, but really all I was doing was saying prepared remarks, and it made me really think about what Kamala Harris is doing in avoiding the press. It's easy to get up on stage and just say what you want to say. It's a lot harder to go on shows like yours and be pelted with questions that you don't know you're going to be asked and have to come up with answers. And I think that tells us a lot about Kamala Harris. She's taking the easy way out. And, you know, if you want to be our president, if you want to be the president of the United States, you have to earn it. Kamala Harris has not earned it, and President Donald J. Trump has, and he continues to work for us every day, and that's what he'll do when he's back in the White House.
Are you happy with the cooperation from the Republican National Committee? We had Laura Trump on earlier this week, and I'm very fond of her, we're hoping to have the chairman on as well, Michael Whatley. But I mean, are you confident that they're also rolling up their sleeves and getting it done for us?
This is absolutely a new Republican National Committee. I just had a meeting today with people from the Republican National Committee. They are giving me the support and the resources that I need to make sure that I can get this done, that my staff can get this done, that all of the volunteers can get this done and put Donald Trump back in the White House.
Good. Wonderful. All right, my friend, protectthevote.com, protectthevote.com. Lida Kearns, thank you for joining me here live from the DNC. I appreciate it.
Rich, I just want to remind you, I don't just sue Democrats. I also sue Philly drive time radio hosts who constantly tease their hapless Harvard educated producers on air. So you better watch out. I'm Matt DeSantis's friend, so I'm listening. So just be afraid. Well, just like the Democrats should be afraid of me.
Well, luckily, since you and I are technically recording the interview live, but I'm playing it at a time that's not live. And I have to say that for the FCC so we don't get sued. DeSantis doesn't have his headphones on, Linda Kearns, so he doesn't know that you're defending him right now. So I don't have to worry about him utilizing your fantastic legal services to defend him. So I don't have to worry about that, which is great.
Well, I think the Democrats should be worried because I'm in charge and I'm going to make sure that this election is fair. And I'm asking your listeners, protectthevote.com. Go today and sign up.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Linda Kearns, everybody. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you, Rich.
All right, as we continue along here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT from the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, Chi-Town, appreciate you being here today. There's, this story about the jobs report. I just wanted to share a thought on this for you from our other buddy, EJ Antoni. I think he's got a great perspective on this, which is this. And it goes like this. Let me pull up the tweet real quick. All right, so don't forget, but today's massive downward benchmark revision, second largest on record, is on top of the existing downward revision to the initial monthly jobs report figures. Between all the revisions, job growth for the 12-month period was wildly overestimated, almost 1.2 million. 1.2 million. And then our buddy Wendy Patterson responds to that and says, are you hearing that they're going to release the revision of a second year? According to Maria Bartiromo, who said that on Fox Business earlier today. That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Venaria. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VenariaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, VenariaDental.com. And, you know, tonight is the Midwestern doofus, Tim Walz. And I want to make a point of saying why I call him the Midwestern doofus. And it's very, very important to know. Because he's acting like the goofy white guy you see in sitcoms all the time. You know, the goofy knucklehead, you notice how in commercials they always do this now, where it's like the goofy white guy? That's Tim Walz's role in all this. And he comes out like it's this, just this giant doofus. And there's this great video of him coming out. He's flailing his arms on stage. And somebody said he's got the same vibe as a Richard Simmons exercise video. And it's the same kind of cringe. But tonight's his night. This is obviously after the Obamas and their triumphant return to Chicago, a city that they abandoned. So that's the thing. Obama comes out last night. Barack comes out last night. And he says, it's great to be home, Chicago. It's great to be home. Dude, you left Chicago and you went to Martha's Vineyard, all right? Stop acting like you were escorted out of here or that they made you leave or you chose to leave Chicago and then buy a massive, massive mansion in Martha's Vineyard where it is not wind and solar powered completely. And you chose to live that lifestyle, dude, which is fine. I mean, hey, I'm not judging, but don't act like you're coming back to Chicago and you're doing this is your home and you've just been on vacation or you've been traveling. You left. All right. You left a lot of people in the south side of Chicago. You left a lot of people who today, that video that's been going around the internet of people commenting on how the Obamas did nothing for Chicago. And when it was their time, they just, goodbye. That's how it works. That's how it works with the elites. They don't really want to stay where they are. They just want to get going and go someplace nicer. And then if people come to those areas that shouldn't be there, like if illegal immigrants show up in Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard, that's when they get really nervous. Because now the whole neighborhood's changing. And then they got to run. And they got to run really, really far away. All right? But the other point, too, that I wanted to mention is that when Doug Emhoff came out last night and showed, they had the whole reel of his family and they showed all the pictures. And I was wondering when they were going to show a picture of the nanny, because I was hoping to see the nanny, but I didn't get to see the nanny. I was kind of bummed out by that. But he's another one, the doofus, you know, the goofy guy and the rom-com love story of him and Kamala. So apparently she sat on the runway, her plane, waiting for 15 minutes for him to finish the speech. Not on the runway, excuse me, in the air. In the air. The plane circled the runway for 15 minutes. How much oil did they burn? How much jet fuel did they burn in the course of that? What's the carbon footprint of that? For her to hear the conclusion of a story that she already knows, because theoretically, she's part of the story. Here's the other question, too, I have. Will we ever get to hear the voicemail that she plays on their anniversary, which is tomorrow? Will we get to hear the voicemail? The goofy, hey, it's Doug. Will we get to hear that goofy email? The voicemail? I want to hear it. Come on, please. Please. All right, listen, we got some more news coming out at you. A judge has tossed the FTC's ban on non-competes. That story coming out, non-competes. What's wrong with me? You know what it is? It's been a long show. That's what it is. It's been a long show. So I'll give you some details on that and what that means if you are subject to a non-compete and then where this goes from here. Plus, tonight, the Midwestern doofus takes the stage. But tomorrow night, of course, all eyes on the presumptive Democrat nominee Kamala Harris. Well, she's not really not presumptive. There's nothing presumptive about it at this point. She's the nominee. How are the polls looking? I'll give you some insight into those as well as we conclude our fourth and final hour from the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
As we continue along here at Talk Radio 1210 WPHD from the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, a federal judge in Texas struck down a landmark regulation issued by the FTC that sought to ban employers from using non-compete agreements to prevent most workers from joining rival firms. U.S. District Judge Ada Brown ruled that the commission's authority to police unfair methods of competition couldn't be used to issue substantive regulations that ban an entire category of conduct. The role of an administrative agency is to do as told by Congress, not to do what the agency thinks it should do. You know, as much as I would love if my non-compete agreement went away, I have to agree with the judge here. The role is to do what they're told to do by Congress, not to just come up with new powers and authorities out of thin air. That's not how it's supposed to work. The ban issued in April was part of the FTC chair Linda Kahn's effort to crack down on tactics that restrict the ability of workers to switch jobs. Outlawing non-competes is hugely popular with many workers, and the FTC estimated its non-competes is hugely popular, would have boosted earnings by allowing employers to move more freely between companies. But the real question is whether or not the executive branch of government has the authority to do this. And so now the FTC is looking to do an appeal. And this all goes back to a firm in Dallas, Texas, that was backed by the Chamber of Commerce and other business groups. And they sued to block the regulation days after the FTC adopted the measure. So that happened. And we'll wait and see how that goes. But again, you know, anytime that we can rein in the administrative state from overstepping their bounds, overstepping their authority, I think it's a good thing. Because even if you agree with what they're doing, you got to question their ability to do it. You got to question their ability to do it. And if they don't have the authority under the Constitution, then you got to say no. You got to throw it out. You got to throw it away. That's just how it has to work. I wanted to share some polling data with you. So basically, if you look at where things stand right now, the race is effectively tied. In the swing states, the race is tied. So now you have a lot of lefties now coming out and saying, did Kamala Harris blow it? Should she have gone with her lead and done more with the lead? And she may regret sitting on her lead. Well, the lead was not real. the lead that Kamala Harris allegedly had was a fugazi. It was a fugazi. It was never real. It was always the momentum of them shivving Joe Biden, shoving the guy off the stage, getting rid of him, and then all of a sudden, out of thin air, you get Kamala Harris, who was not elected by anybody in the Democrat Party during a primary. And she comes in, and people turn around and go, oh, we're so excited. What they were excited to, what they were reacting to, was not Kamala Harris. They were reacting to the fact that they didn't have Joe Biden anymore. Let's face it, that's what they were looking, that's what they were excited about, that they got rid of the old guy. They got rid of the old guy who they put on at, what, 11:30 at night the other night at the Republican National Convention, the Democrat National Convention, because they didn't want him anywhere near prime time. Democrats were just excited about that. And that's the reality. But when, as people get to know Kamala Harris, they understand who she is and they realize they're not loving this person. And so tomorrow night when she gets on the stage, this is an opportunity for her to blow it bigly. But here's something else, too. You're noticing Democrats in large part are on their best behavior at this convention. That's one of the observations that I've had. They're on their best behavior. They really are. And there's a reason for that. They've got 70 days to act right. And after 70 days, they can go back to being crazy. They're saying the quiet part out loud.
We got 70 days to act right, y'all.
That's right.
After 70 days, we can go back being crazy.
Right?
That's right. 70 days to act right, y'all. Well, then after 70 days, we can go back to acting crazy. Okay? That's what you got to realize. We got 70 days to act right, and then we can go nuts. Then let's get nuts. Now, I'm telling you that America is pushing back against the DEI, the wokeness, the nonsense, all of it. And in a win against DEI and the nonsense, Harley Davidson, one of the great American companies, has reversed course on their controversial DEI policies. So this is a big deal, because Harley Davidson is an iconic American brand. And their European CEO, Jochen Zeitz, has reversed course on his controversial push to rebrand the company with a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. The move comes after significant public pressure, particularly from conservative advocate Robbie Starbuck, who rallied his followers on X to oppose the company's mandatory DEI policies. These policies include promoting employee identity groups, prioritizing suppliers based on diversity rather than product quality, and awarding jobs according to criteria set by a pro-transgender advocacy group. For his part, Starbucks celebrated the rollback as another victory for those advocating for merit and professionalism over identity politics. His campaign drew widespread attention, including from Elon Musk, which likely alarmed Harley-Davidson board members focused on the company's stock performance. Because let's face it, that's all a company should be focused on, is their bottom line and their stock performance. That's it. The board, which includes influential figures such as the CEO of Ford Motor Company and the president of the United States program for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, likely played a role in steering the company away from the DEI agenda. Although I doubt the person involved from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I'm sure they were probably trying to double down on it. But the shift in Harley-Davidson follows a similar backlash, of course, faced by Bud Light in 2023, where executives distanced themselves from a failed attempt to rebrand the beer by associating it with transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney. And to poo-poo all the customers by saying that all the customers were a bunch of frat boys. And, you know, whenever people do that, and this is something that really burns me, it really does. It's this whole idea of, we know that you are the customer, we know you put money in our pockets, but you, we hate you. I mean, even though you're the reason why we're here, and even though you're the reason why we can feed our children, and even though you're the reason why we're keeping the lights on, we hate you. And we wish you weren't our customers. I mean, what kind of a message is that to the consumer base? Oh, but you know who's not pushing back? You know, I mean, I should say, you know who's not yielding to the woke mafia? Michael Keaton. That's right. And I love Michael Keaton. You know, he's the OG Batman on the big screen. On the big screen. I know people get upset when I say that because they go Adam West, but on the big screen, Michael Keaton's the OG, baby. He took the character in an entirely different direction. And in my mind, he'll always be the OG Batman. I'm not saying he's the best Batman. You know, I know this is controversial. I still go with Christian Bale. And since we are in Chicago, I've gotten to see some of the filming locations for The Dark Knight and Batman Begins, which is pretty cool. Christopher Nolan decided to shoot those movies in Chicago because he wanted a gritty, realistic feel for Gotham. That's why he chose Chicago. Now, if he had done it during the DNC, he would have had actual criminals to use for the movie. He wouldn't have had to pay any extras. But hey, at the time, it wasn't readily available. So he just had to hire extras to play them versus just going on the streets and just finding them. Here at the DNC, where he had dozens of people arrested for protests last night. But actor Michael Keaton has said the new movie Beetlejuice, which is coming out very, very soon, the main character he plays, he didn't change it to accommodate the politically correct crowd. According to the Daily Wire, the 72-year-old star said one of his stipulations for agreeing to participate in the sequel 36 years later was not giving the character a lot of...
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
As we continue along here at Talk Radio 1210 WPHT from the Democrat National Convention in Chicago, a federal judge in Texas struck down a landmark regulation issued by the FTC that sought to ban employers from using non-compete agreements to prevent most workers from joining rival firms. U.S. District Judge Ada Brown ruled that the commission's authority to police unfair methods of competition couldn't be used to issue substantive regulations that ban an entire category of conduct. The role of an administrative agency is to do as told by Congress, not to do what the agency thinks it should do. You know, as much as I would love if my non-compete agreement went away, I have to agree with the judge here. The role is to do what they're told to do by Congress, not to just come up with new powers and authorities out of thin air. That's not how it's supposed to work. The ban issued in April was part of the FTC chair Linda Kahn's effort to crack down on tactics that restrict the ability of workers to switch jobs. Outlawing non-competes is hugely popular with many workers, and the FTC estimated its non-competes is hugely popular. It would have boosted earnings by allowing employers to move more freely between companies. But the real question is whether or not the executive branch of government has the authority to do this. And so now the FTC is looking to do an appeal. And this all goes back to a firm in Dallas, Texas, that was backed by the Chamber of Commerce and other business groups. And they sued to block the regulation days after the FTC adopted the measure. So that happened. And we'll wait and see how that goes. But again, you know, anytime that we can rein in the administrative state from overstepping their bounds, overstepping their authority, I think it's a good thing. Because even if you agree with what they're doing, you got to question their ability to do it. You got to question their ability to do it. And if they don't have the authority under the Constitution, then you got to say no. You got to throw it out. You got to throw it away. That's just how it has to work. I mentioned that I wanted to share some polling data with you. So basically, if you look at where things stand right now, the race is effectively tied. In the swing states, the race is tied. So now you have a lot of lefties now coming out and saying, did Kamala Harris blow it? Should she have gone with her lead and done more with the lead? And she may regret sitting on her lead. Well, the lead was not real. The lead that Kamala Harris allegedly had was a fugazi. The fugazi. It was never real. It was always the momentum of them shivving Joe Biden, shoving the guy off the stage, getting rid of him. And then all of a sudden, out of thin air, you get Kamala Harris, who was not elected by anybody in the Democrat Party during a primary. And she comes in, and people turn around and go, oh, we're so excited. What they were excited to, what they were reacting to, was not Kamala Harris. They were reacting to the fact that they didn't have Joe Biden anymore. Let's face it, that's what they were looking, that's what they were excited about, that they got rid of the old guy. They got rid of the old guy who they put on at, what, 11:30 at night the other night at the Republican National Convention, the Democrat National Convention, because they didn't want him anywhere near primetime. Democrats were just excited about that. And that's the reality. But as people get to know Kamala Harris, they understand who she is and they realize they're not loving this person. And so tomorrow night when she gets on the stage, this is an opportunity for her to blow it bigly. But here's something else, too. You're noticing Democrats in large part are on their best behavior at this convention. That's one of the observations that I've had. They're on their best behavior. They really are. And there's a reason for that. They've got 70 days to act right. And after 70 days, they can go back to being crazy. they're saying the quiet part out loud.
We got 70 days to act right, y'all.
That's right.
After 70 days, we can go back to being crazy.
Right?
That's right. 70 days to act right, y'all. Well, then after 70 days, we can go back to acting crazy. Okay? That's what you got to realize. We got 70 days to act right, and then we can go nuts. Then let's get nuts. Now, I'm telling you that America is pushing back against the DEI, the wokeness, the nonsense, all of it. And in a win against DEI and the nonsense, Harley-Davidson, one of the great American companies, has reversed course on their controversial DEI policies. So this is a big deal because Harley-Davidson is an iconic American brand. And their European CEO, Jochen Zeitz, has reversed course on his controversial push to rebrand the company with a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. The move comes after significant public pressure, particularly from conservative advocate Robbie Starbuck, who rallied his followers on X to oppose the company's mandatory DEI policies. These policies include promoting employee identity groups, prioritizing suppliers based on diversity rather than product quality, and awarding jobs according to criteria set by a pro-transgender advocacy group. For his part, Starbuck celebrated the rollback as another victory for those advocating for merit and professionalism over identity politics. His campaign drew widespread attention, including from Elon Musk, which likely alarmed Harley-Davidson board members focused on the company's stock performance. Because let's face it, that's all a company should be focused on, is their bottom line and their stock performance. That's it. The board, which includes influential figures such as the CEO of Ford Motor Company and the president of the United States Program for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, likely played a role in steering the company away from the DEI agenda. Although I doubt the person involved from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I'm sure they were probably trying to double down on it. But the shift in Harley-Davidson follows a similar backlash, of course, faced by Bud Light in 2023, where executives distanced themselves from a failed attempt to rebrand the beer by associating it with transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney. And to poo-poo all the customers by saying that all the customers were a bunch of frat boys. And, you know, whenever people do that, and this is something that really burns me, it really does. It's this whole idea of, we know that you are the customer, we know you put money in our pockets, but you, we hate you. I mean, even though you're the reason why we're here, and even though you're the reason why we can feed our children, and even though you're the reason why we're keeping the lights on, we hate you. And we wish you weren't our customers. I mean, what kind of a message is that to the consumer base? Oh, but you know who's not pushing back? You know, I mean, I should say, you know who's not yielding to the woke mafia? Michael Keaton. That's right. And I love Michael Keaton. You know, he's the OG Batman on the big screen. On the big screen. I know people get upset when I say that because they go Adam West, but on the big screen, Michael Keaton's the OG, baby. He took the character in an entirely different direction. And in my mind, he'll always be the OG Batman. I'm not saying he's the best Batman. You know, I know this is controversial. I still go with Christian Bale. And since we are in Chicago, I've gotten to see some of the filming locations for The Dark Knight and Batman Begins, which is pretty cool. Christopher Nolan decided to shoot those movies in Chicago because he wanted a gritty, realistic feel for Gotham. That's why he chose Chicago. Now, if he had done it during the DNC, he would have had actual criminals to use for the movie. He wouldn't have had to pay any extras. But hey, at the time, it wasn't readily available. So he, you know, just had to hire extras to play them versus just going on the streets and just finding them here at the DNC, where he had dozens of people arrested for protests last night. But actor Michael Keaton has said the new movie Beetlejuice, which is coming out very, very soon, the main character he plays, he didn't change it to accommodate the politically correct crowd. According to the Daily Wire, the 72-year-old star said one of his stipulations for agreeing to participate in the sequel 36 years later was not giving the character a lot of screen time, just like in the first film. The idea was, no, you can't load it up with Beetlejuice. That'll kill it, he said. I think the Beetlejuice character doesn't drive the story as much as he did in the first one. He's more part of the storyline in this one as opposed to the first one, which is a case of the thing comes in and drives the movie a lot. But he also went on to say that he's not going to be politically correct. He said, here's the thing. He's more of a thing than a he or she. He's more of an it. And I'm not saying it to be politically correct. I just viewed it as a force more than anything. I mean, there's definitely strong male energy, like stupid male energy, which I love. You don't want to touch that because it's not like you go, well, it's a new year and this thing would now act like that. And I appreciate that fact because he's holding true to the original character. And I think that that's very, very important as well. And good for him. I say good for him for that. And good for the movie, the creators behind the movie, too. You know what I mean? Because nobody wants to see a politically correct Beetlejuice. What does that even look like? I don't even know what that looks like. The very, very concept of Beetlejuice is that he's not politically correct. It's freaking Beetlejuice, all right? It's Beetlejuice. So, like, let's not pretend for a second here that we are politically... Oh, you know, now that I talked about crime in Chicago, I'm going to get another voicemail from Mama Zioli. She called me 15 times this morning. I mentioned this earlier in the show, but she called me 15 times this morning, but wouldn't leave a voicemail. And I just... But I knew what she was doing. She was calling to leave a voicemail so that I played on the show. And it just, she eventually had to use my father's phone to get the voicemail to go through. And this is what she said when she finally got through one of the two times to warn me about crime in Chicago. Let's see if we can take a listen here.
You're going to have to block everybody in the world because I will call you and warn you. So just don't unblock me, please, so I can call you. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Yeah, I don't know if you were able to hear that or not. So it's your mother. I wasn't able to get you on my phone, so I'm wondering if you blocked me. So this is Dad's phone, so you don't have to block everybody in the world because I will call you and warn you. Just so don't unblock me, please, so I can call you. I think she meant to say don't block me, please, so I can call you. Thank you. Love you. Bye. So now I'm getting daily voicemails from Mama Zioli warning me to be careful, baby. I got 11 phone calls at 7 between the time period of, actually, no, I'm sorry, 11 plus 5. So 16 phone calls and a FaceTime video, all between 7:31 and 7:33 a.m. In the span of 2 minutes, 16 phone calls and a FaceTime request. And then my father calls at 7:40 a.m. Then at 10:21 a.m. That's right. And at 10:21 a.m. did not leave a voicemail. So this is what happens, you know? I mean, but Sean Hannity doesn't have to worry about this stuff because, of course, he's got, you know, he's got bodyguards. Anyway, it's not that, it really is not that bad here. I think part of the reason is, and we were noticing this last night when we were walking around Chicago, is that I think everybody left. I really do. I think everybody left kind of like it was when the Pope came to Philly. Remember that? Pope came to Philly and everybody got out of town. And I used to make the joke, the Pope stood up there and said, where's all the people, eh? Where's all the people? I think it was kind of like that. You know, you turn around and you go, I don't understand, where'd everybody go? But everybody figured that Chicago was going to be a mess between the protesters and all the people coming for the DNC, that they figured, let's get out of Dodge. Let's get out of here. Let's go to our vacation homes, or let's just go someplace else. I mean, everybody could work remote these days for the most part. So that's the sense of what I got, because we were walking around the nice part of Chicago last night. I mean, downtown Chicago by Lake Michigan and by the river. And for the most part, it was a lot of tumbleweed going by. There were certainly no criminals, and the homeless was gone. They were gone, too. I don't know where the unhoused, excuse me. I refer to them as the unhoused. I don't know where they put the unhoused. I don't know where they put them, but I didn't see them on the streets. That's all I know. Speaking of Hollywood, by the way, remember the other day I told you the story of this woman who got hurt in an accident, and then Disney tried to say that they weren't liable because she had signed up to use Disney Plus. And that the Disney Plus agreement blocks them from having any liability, even though she was hurt in a physical accident and had nothing to do with watching something streaming. Well, the entertainment company faced massive backlash after that. People were like, are you kidding me? You're going to really try to dodge accountability for this by saying that because a woman signed up to use your streaming service, that they waive their right to sue because who got injured? Seriously? So Disney withdrew their request to settle a wrongful death lawsuit out of court, clearing the way for the case of a woman who died from a severe allergic reaction to food she ate at a Disney World resort to be heard in front of a jury. But isn't that something, that company? I mean, the audacity of these people, right? This the woman was a family medicine specialist who lived on Long Island. and severely allergic to nuts and dairy. Died in October after eating dishes her server assured her were allergen-free. So when that happened, Disney tried to claim, hey, listen, when you signed up for Disney Plus, if you read the fine print, you can't ever sue us. And then they got all kinds of backlash after news reports came out. The companies claimed that the husband had agreed to arbitration when he signed up for a free trial of the Disney streaming service and was therefore not eligible to sue. I mean, just what a greedy, greedy, terrible company, right? Disney also noted that the restaurant, Raglan Road, an Irish pub in the Disney Springs section of its Orlando resort, was independently owned and operated. But they got a whole bunch of backlash from this. So despite repeated claims that Disney's only role in the tragedy was as a landlord, a representative for the company said that it acknowledged that arbitration would draw out an already painful process for the family. The hearing to move the case to arbitration, set for October 2nd, was canceled on Tuesday. So I guess a happy ending for the story in the sense that now we can go forward and at least, you know, the family maybe will get some justice. All right, listen, the great one, Mark Levin, is up next. We're back tomorrow night with more coverage at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. We'll see how the Midwestern doofus Tim Walz does tonight. If you missed any part of the show, it's podcast for you. And day four tomorrow night concludes with Kamala Harris taking the stage at the DNC. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.